Welcome, everyone. Episode 426 of the NBA podcast. The play-in tournament has started. We are still waiting for the full playoff bracket to come into view. So until then, we have five more teams that we need to say goodbye to. They are not participating in the play-in tournament or the playoffs. Their season is over. So today, we are going to say bye, Felicia, and ask what's next for the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Sacramento Kings, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Chicago Bulls, and the Toronto Raptors. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at TheNBAPod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And we're recording our show today on Locker Room, the only live audio social network for sports fans. Listen to our show on Locker Room before it hits your iTunes feed, engage with us in real time, or start your own room to react to the draft, trade news, and more. Take the mic and download Locker Room in the Apple App Store. Joining me today is a guy who is very mad about the NBA scheduling Lakers-Warriors for 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Morten Jensen, how's it going?
Yeah, no, it's not going well because I don't want to get up at 4 in the morning to watch that game. I've got work. I've got responsibilities, Brian. And you know what? Here's the thing. I know that a ton of Europeans, like millions maybe, would have stayed up to watch that game if it had been just 2 hours earlier. So I know that they would prefer in the United States to get the West Coast on. I don't care. Cater to the global audience now.
To be honest, I wish it was at 4 in the morning my time. I would have a chance to watch more of it than I probably will with it at 10 p.m. Eastern, because that's when the baby tends to wake up. So,
we DM'd at 4 in the morning for you earlier.
I know. So I can't say that I'm likely to watch the full game as it's unfolding live, but I will catch it tomorrow. We'll hit the four teams that get knocked out of the play-in later. We also have the playoffs to do predictions for and, you know, talk about all the round ones. But until we know who's facing whom, we know it's going to be Celtics-Nets in the first round, but we're still waiting for the rest of the bracket to be revealed. So, Mort, let's say bye, Felicia, to a couple more teams. Let's start with the Oklahoma City Thunder, who we talked about recently when we were discussing teams that have a bright future in the NBA. You know, the big takeaway here is they have just every draft pick from now until the end of time. 17 first-round picks, 17 second-round picks over the next 7 years. I think a lot of people, myself included, have compared them somewhat to the process Sixers. The starting points are different, but this is a full tear this thing down to the studs and let's rebuild. The starting points, though, are different, whereas the Sixers gave away a lot of assets for Andrew Bynum, who didn't play for them. You know, the Thunder, this rebuild started because Paul George wanted to go to the Clippers, and they got a ton for him. They flipped Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. They flipped Chris Paul, Steven Adams this past summer, Dennis Schroeder as well. So they've actually gotten a great starting point. Let's start with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Mort, who really, if the Thunder were better this year, probably would have been an all-star. He is eligible for an extension this summer. Is he a no-brainer max guy, or if not, how much would you give him?
No, he's a no-brainer. I don't think there's any discussion there. He's super young, just finished his third season, obviously. It's not even the raw stats, even though they're super impressive. It's the composure, it's the intelligence, it's the fact that he plays like a 10-year veteran at times. No, okay, sure, I'm not going to say that he does that all the time. There are periods where he does show his age, but compared to players of his age group, that happens very, very rarely compared to others. So when you look at just his development curve, when you look at his high IQ, I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that he is going to drastically improve from here on out. And he's already damn good. Like you said, all-star caliber already. I mean, we're talking about a guy who maybe in a couple of years, as the Thunder get better and more experienced, could sneak into an MVP conversation.
Yeah. I mean, you said it's not about the raw stats, and I agree, but to his credit, the improvements he made in that regard this season are also notable. Almost 24 points, nearly six assists. He had averaged 3.3 over his first two seasons, almost five rebounds, two made threes a game. And the efficiency is what stood out to me. especially
off the charts,
because you know he's playing with really like a pretty G League caliber roster. Otherwise, a roster that lost, I think, 22 of 24 to end the season. He shot 50, 40, 80, not 50, 40, 90, but 50.8 from the field, 41.8 from three, and 80.8 from the free throw line. So to do that when you are, I mean, not only the focal point, like the only player that's going to be on the scouting report for most of the season, is truly incredible. He only played 35 games before an injury shut him down for the year. But yeah, I'm with you. I think that if the Thunder are balking at giving him a max extension and he goes to restricted free agency next summer, some other team is definitely going to do it. So yep. To me, he's an easy no-brainer max guy, which leads into, you know, some of the other young guys on this roster, because yeah, I mean, they've gotten rid of a lot of veterans, including George Hill at the trade deadline and Trevor Reese at the trade deadline as well. So, you know, for the second half of the season, especially, it was a lot of their young guys leading the way. Which of those young players stood out to you, Mort? Who do you think could be long-term keepers? Who do you want to see more out of?
No, I think most of them are long-term keepers, especially Lu Dort and Pokusevski, of course. I think those two, even though Poku is a mystery box, I think he showed enough flashes of brilliance that you just cannot trade away this guy, even if it's a great haul you're receiving. He could be one of those, you know, unicorns, I think is the best term moving forward. And I know that our ideology of what a unicorn used to be was bigs who could shoot. This guy might be able to do literally everything, like play like a point guard, shoot off the dribble, rebound like a center, block shots like a center, get steals like a quick point guard as well. Like, he is one of those guys who could maybe... I'm going to throw out a big one here. He's one of those guys with the capacity to have, maybe not quite, but a Giannis career, if everything like comes into his own. Like, if everything works out. Remember how raw Giannis was when he came in. But it was the length, and it was the flashes of brilliance in virtually every single category that really caught our eye with Giannis. Well, what is Poku doing? He's doing exactly that. So if everything just falls right for him, he could become someone who is a, you know, an annual all-star. And I just don't want to give up on that. If someone calls and says, well, you know, we want Poku, we want the mystery box, and we'll give you some known quantity, that known quantity would have to be insane for me to want to give up on that. And Dort, I'm not giving up simply because he is on such a great contract. I mean, what the hell? They locked him up for nothing, and he is super productive, one of the best young two-way guards in the entire league. I would maybe trade him if I got a major offer that's just too incredible to even fathom, but that's not going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. So keep him and just have, you know, Marcus Smart 2.0 on your roster moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's a point just with regard to the Thunder's overall team construction, and I'm going to write about this probably next month at this rate for Forbes. Like, they have set this roster up so well that it's almost impossible to imagine this rebuild failing. When you have Dort signed for two more years on a cheap contract, Poku is on a rookie deal, Darius Bazley is still on two more years on his rookie deal, Theo Maledon is locked up for three more years, Kenrick Williams for two more years at each of the next two seasons. So they have a ton of financial flexibility, but they also have a lot of young guys who could develop into something interesting. I'm with you on Dort and Poku. I actually liked what I saw out of Maledon, especially later in the season. And I think Bazley, I don't know what he becomes. Like, I don't know what his ceiling is, but if nothing else, his floor feels like rotation player. So, you know, OKC has some work to do with regard to, like, we need to replenish our top tier talent next to SGA, and maybe one or two of these guys could develop into that. But even if not, I think all of those, you know, all of them are going to stick in the NBA. It's like, I don't think any of them are going to flush out in 2 years' time. And, you know, having those guys, especially on cheap deals, is going to give you a lot of flexibility with regard to trades as well. I think, you know, you're going to have to bring in other contracts, or we'll talk about Al Horford in a second, but, you know, bring in guys for salary matching purposes. But, like, any contender is going to want any of these, like Kenrick Williams on a $2.0 million deal for the next two seasons. For a team that's bumping up against the luxury tax, he would be a huge asset. So I don't think, you know, as long as the list on Real GM of their future draft picks is right now, I don't think Sam Presti is done. It's going to get longer, which is really impressive.
Is it a hot take to say that I prefer Moses Brown over Darius Basley?
I don't think he's another good one. And they got him locked up for, what, it was a 4-year deal, right? Yeah.
Oh, was it four?
Yeah.
It was longer than I thought he would get. Yeah.
It is, well, three more after the current season. So, yeah, he's under contract.
Wow.
Two non-guaranteed, yep, and then a team option, but under contract through the 23-24 season.
Yeah. And then, obviously, no, wait a second, because I have to make sure that we are not making that same Jokic mistake, because Moses Brown was not drafted, so he could theoretically be, no, but he was a free agent, right? So there isn't the Jokic problem of him, if they pick up the team option on that last year.
Of, like, restricted just, free agency versus...
Yeah.
I would have to double-check.
Right? Yeah. Because he wasn't drafted whatsoever, and they he played for Portland last year, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't trade him or trade for him via Portland. They signed him as... Let me just go... Yeah. So he signed an Exhibit 10 contract with the Blazers, signed a two-way with the Blazers... Then he signed a two-way with the Thunder. He actually got waived by the Thunder. What? He got waived? And then signed the multi-year contract? Is that the way that works? So convert the two-way contract? I think Basketball Reference is wrong here. It says they waived him.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
pretty sure they didn't. Yeah, March 28th. They did not waive him. I'm fairly certain they didn't waive him.
So I'm looking at this. It looks like if he's been in the league for three or fewer seasons, he could be restricted. So because he played for Portland, they would have to...
That's 1 year.
Yeah. So then after next season, they would have to give up 2 years of him on that cheap deal. They're not going to do that. They're just going to keep him on the contract on a super cheap
deal. And then they go into 2024 with him being an unrestricted free agent, but they would have had him at that point in time for four seasons.
Right.
So that gives them some negotiation power in knowing who he is as a basketball player. And look, if he breaks out and plays phenomenal basketball over that period of time, they're getting a starting caliber player for under $2 million a year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's just phenomenal work from Sam Presti. And I think the one, you know, the SGA currently is the second highest paid player on the roster at $5.5 million next season. So they have a ton of financial flexibility. The one guy earning more than him right now is Al Horford, whom they shut down for the second half of the season, in part to keep him healthy, in part because they wanted to feature the young guys, in part because the league pretends to care about tanking but doesn't actually care about tanking. So he has $27 million guaranteed next year, and then $26.5 million in 22-23, only $14.5 million of that is guaranteed. Goes up to $19.5 if the team makes the NBA Finals, which I don't think OKC needs to worry about next year, and fully guaranteed if he wins a title. So what do you think Presti should do with Horford this summer? Should he try to trade him and get even more draft picks and young guys in, or do you think Horford serves a purpose for this young roster?
Either or, honestly. I mean, if he accepts being this veteran presence off the bench who can sort of be a mentor to both Moses Brown, Basley, Poku to some extent, whoever they get in the draft, if they go big, sure, that would be great. I don't know if he wants to do that. I don't know if he wants to go ring chasing instead. But in which case, see, this is what we've talked about as well. Players who are past their primes and obviously overpaid because of where they are from an age perspective, earning this kind of coin, they are not easy to trade at all. Yeah. Because you're looking at the contenders and they are already, like, maxed out in terms of cap space. They don't have available money, and the reason why teams are good is because they spend wisely. Like, they don't have bad contracts on their books. So what do they even have to trade for Horford? Mm-hmm. I mean, Horford next year is earning, like you said, $27 million. You have to match salary. There is not a good team out there that has cap space. Well, the Knicks. But you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Knicks are not going to spend $27 million of their open cap space on absorbing Al Horford.
I hope not.
No, I just don't think that's in the cards. Even, I mean, Tips might love it, to be honest with you. Yeah. But still, I don't think that would behoove them.
Right.
I don't think that would be a smart play. So, like, what kind of situation is out there? I think Presti should absolutely try to trade him. But overall, I just don't see a deal out there that makes a whole lot of sense if Horford, like, insists he wants to go to a contender. Like, what is that deal?
Yeah, I mean, I would have said Boston if they hadn't used a lot of the trade exception.
Yeah.
Like, maybe you negotiate a sign-and-trade with Fournier. But even still, Boston's, like, bumping up against the tax already, so it's going to get tricky for them with regard to how much money they can take back. It's tough to find a destination off the top of my head that makes sense. Like, maybe New Orleans wants to swap him out for Steven Adams, although they've got plenty of picks as well. Like, if I'm OKC, I'm not spending assets to get off of Al Horford. If anything,
agreed,
I'm using him to take back an even worse contract, and I'm adding to my asset pool. But I'm in no rush to dump him. If I have to pay a first round pick or two first round picks to get off him, absolutely not. Just keep him around for one more year, and then, you know, maybe you can waive him the next year if he really wants out, something like that. But I don't think they need to be in any hurry there, because I keep mentioning the financial flexibility here. I mean, they're projected to have upward of $50 million to spend this summer more. So if you're Sam Presti, what would you do with that money? Would you go after free agents? Would you try to use it to accept bad contracts, some combination of the two? And if you're chasing free agents, do you have any guys in mind for OKC?
I would go several routes, actually. First and foremost, I have two guys who I've identified that I would want to go after aggressively. Assuming, of course, that these guys are willing to let their championship dreams, you know, be put on hold, or maybe just not interested in going that route necessarily. And that is Garrett Temple and Ned Davis, both of whom are great, great locker room presences, and they are known as extraordinary teammates. I want those kind of veterans around this very, very young team. Both of whom could probably have for pretty cheaply. Mm-hmm. That said, if they have championship aspirations, you may need to dip in and pay them just a little bit more, because you would be taking a year off their somewhat limited NBA career that they have left due to their ages. So you would probably have to compensate them for a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then after that, after I've gotten those two in, who can sort of take care of the locker room, who can act as coaches on the floor, who can be, you know, the supportive teammates, the supportive veterans, that's when I go in with the Sam Hinkie specials. Like, try to find guys on the cheap and all of that. And then I would also go the route that you just mentioned. Hey, we'll take your crap if you give us a first-round draft pick. You can play all those three cards in the same summer if you want to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's remarkable what they can do. And they also have the possibility, you know, they get Houston's first-round pick if it falls outside of the top four. There's a 52.1% chance Houston keeps that pick. So 47.9% that they're getting Houston's pick at number five. They also have their own pick. They have a 45.1% chance right now of getting a top four pick. So there's a world wherein they walk out of the summer with Cade Cunningham and Jonathan Kuminga to add to SGA plus $50 million in space. Like, even if the lottery breaks poorly for them and they slip to, you know, 7 or 8, you're still adding another top 10 pick to this core. You still have a ton of future assets, a ton of flexibility. I could not be higher on what OKC is doing, as much as I troll about how disrespectful they are to the game of basketball.
So if they actually walk away with Cade Cunningham and Jonathan Kuminga. Would Twitter break?
I mean, I think there would be a lot of people saying that lottery was rigged. Of course. Mostly from Houston.
Right, but people say that every single year.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to the Sacramento Kings, Mort, who did not appear in our future power rankings. A large part of that was because we are super down on Luke Walton. But James Hamm of NBC Sports Bay Area recently reported that he is expected to return next year. Now, this isn't a surprise if you've been following. Sam Amick of The Athletic in particular has been alluding to this really for months now. Back in March, he and Jason Jones said, you know, the Kings owners had lost $100 million because of the pandemic, and they weren't especially keen on paying two coaches again. They've done this a couple times now, and they just, you know, did not want to eat. I think Walton has two more years left on his deal, so they just didn't want to eat that. But more, do the Kings have any hope of digging out of their mediocrity as long as Luke Walton is their head coach?
So how many, I'm trying to figure out how many languages I can say no. No, I honestly don't have a whole lot of optimism surrounding Walton. I think we covered that last time we spoke about the Kings, so there's no real need to go into the whys. Mm-hmm. But also, remember when we recorded last time around and we started saying, you know, Karl Anthony Towns might be the next big name to ask for a trade? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that I've heard anything out of Sacramento, and look, De'Aaron Fox seems like one of those very loyal guys, but another season of incompetence, mediocrity, however you want to paint it, he's too good to be on a team like that.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he acknowledges that and goes, hey, guys, if we are going to keep sucking, I don't want to be here.
Right. Well, unfortunately, they squandered one of their biggest chances to add a impact piece around him in the 2018 draft when they took Marvin Bagley at number two. They passed up Trae Young. They passed up, Luka Doncic, Jaren Jackson Jr.
Oh, that guy?
Yeah. So they passed up a number of guys who have since gone on to look very good in their young careers, whereas Marvin Bagley, like, I don't want to rag on him too much because injuries have definitely played a part in this, but, you know, it's been 3 years of basically, like, remarkably the same production. It's around 25 minutes a game, about 14 points, 7.5 rebounds, around, you know, 50% shooting, but there haven't been too many signs of, okay, this guy's taking the next step to what we need him to be. You know, there was earlier in the season, his dad, I believe, got on Twitter at some point and was like liking tweets about trading him or wanting him to get traded.
I think he even tweeted, right?
Yeah. And then De'Aaron Fox or Buddy Hield or someone, I don't remember the exact details, but someone liked the tweet from his dad about trying to trade Marvin Bagley. So,
oh, wait, wasn't it De'Aaron Fox's dad?
Was it? I don't even know.
I think it was a dad war.
Oh, good. All right. I stopped caring about dad wars after Jahlil Okafor. That one broke me.
No, but here's the thing. Are you telling me that Marvin Bagley, who plays a position that's no longer attractive in the NBA, is not going to work out as a franchise-altering player? Is that what you're telling me?
It does seem that way. And that was one of the concerns about him coming in was, is he, you know, kind of that tweener where, you know, mm-hmm. now he needs to basically be a center, but he can't be, but he's not a power forward either. So, so far, the answer seems to be yes. But more, they're up. It's decision time for them with Bagley because he, like SGA, is now 3 years into his career, which means he's eligible for an extension this summer. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that extension is not coming, but yeah. Do the Kings just need to cut their losses and move on from him this summer?
Yes, of course. Look, I didn't want to be right when... So full disclosure, last fall, I did the whole video on my YouTube channel about is the power forward position dead? Mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to be wrong about it, but this pattern is just emerging too frequently. When you have guys who can't play make, who are completely reliant upon getting set up by others, that means you put a pretty significant ceiling on what you can do as a unit when that particular player is out there. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to pay that player a substantial percentage of your salary cap to boot, that is only going to make everything that much more problematic because you need to build around that player's weaknesses, his shortcomings. It just doesn't work anymore. That's also why we're seeing the Bulls likely moving on from Lauri Markkanen. It's also why we're seeing the Hawks hesitate on maxing out John Collins. Mm-hmm. This type of player, and it's also why I'm actually not that high on Darius Bazley. That's why I brought it up earlier with Moses Brown. Like, I don't see that archetype of player being successful anymore in today's league. If you are a traditional four in that sense, you need to be of the Pascal Siakam, Giannis Antetokounmpo mold in the terms that you need to be able to handle the ball, you need to be able to pass, you need to be able to rebound, you need to be able to defend. Look, Marvin Bagley doesn't check those boxes at all. He can play pick and roll basketball. He can grab you some rebounds. That's it. You don't pay a substantial amount of money of that. You can find that in free agency. I mean, good Lord. I'm just going to name you a name here. If you're looking for a center, and like instead of pigeonholing Marvin Bagley at center, would you not agree with me that going out and signing Enes Kanter instead is better?
Yeah, I mean, given the expected price points for each player.
Right.
Although, I mean, that's kind of the question is, what do you expect Marvin Bagley to get on his next deal?
Well, so that's the thing. Because he's young and because this is the NBA and it only takes one team, mm-hmm. you damn well know someone is going to bite.
Yeah.
That same thing is also going to happen with Lauri Markkanen. And we'll return to the Bulls later. But, I mean, these caliber of players, there are still teams out there that doesn't really function in 2021 who still are a couple of years, let's say, behind.
Yes.
And when that happens, that's when you get into trouble because that's when you sign guys who are just no longer – what's the word here? Relevant? That's almost too tough because I still think he has a role in this league. Right. It's just not as a starter earning big time money. I mean, look, Marvin Bagley should be a backup who makes around $7.5 million per year.
Yeah, that seems right. Like I could see him fitting into what like Derek Favors did in Utah this year, or what Ed Davis,
but just offensively.
Yeah, or like what Ed Davis was supposed to do in Utah last year. But I mean, he wouldn't. Mm. I mean, I brought up Okafor, but like he is a great example of just because you're drafted highly doesn't mean you're guaranteed anything in this league. Okafor was the number three pick, and now he's the third string center in Detroit. You know, like Marvin Bagley, right now, it's hard to imagine that, you know, he's going to make $11.3 million next year. I don't think any team is going to offer him or should offer him a long-term deal at that price point annually.
I would rather have Jahlil Okafor on a mint deal than I would have Marvin Bagley on $11 million a year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I just don't know. It just feels like you're going to have to force it with Bagley. Like, if you're paying him that much money, you're going to force the issue, and I just don't know how he fits into a winning team right now.
Right. And so, full disclosure, we don't really know still what the big plan is in Sacramento. We haven't really seen since Monte McNair came in as the new GM. We haven't really seen him root up the team and just do something completely new. I mean, he's been pretty passive, I would say. I think that's a fair term.
To a fault, you could argue, with Bogdan Bogdanović.
Yeah. And if he has another year where he is passive. And again, I'm not saying that ownership wouldn't have a say in this. Like, maybe his hands are just tied, in which case that's not fair to him. But if he has another offseason where he is passive, you at least have to beg the question, should they just move on from, like, everyone and start all over? I mean, if you can't. You can't keep this current iteration of the roster together one more year. And what does that lead to?
Yeah, well, I will say this. I mean, last year with Bogdanović in particular, he said they were trying to maintain their financial flexibility. They still don't have a ton. They're at $98.1 million guaranteed on their books already this year. But to McNair's credit, he nailed the Halliburton pick. I mean, he did, a beneficiary of Halliburton falling that far, but enough teams passed up on him that someone had to stop his slide, and Sacramento was the team to do so, and reap the rewards accordingly. So that's a win. And the other thing is, with Sacramento, they have a big decision to make in the front court that isn't Marvin Bagley, in the form of Rashawn Holmes, who is going to be an unrestricted free agent this year. He's coming off a season in which he averaged 14.2 points, 8.3 rebounds, shot 63.7% from the field, started 61 every game he appeared in, he started for them.
Yeah.
Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report just put out a piece this week where he was talking to people around the league to hear about like some under-the-radar free agents who actually might be in for a big payday. Rashawn Holmes came up as one of them. One exec speculated he could be in line for a deal around 4 years, $80 million.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me one bit. By the way, I beat Jake on that because I did a video weeks ago when I brought him up as someone who could be one of those under-the-radar picks. He's that good.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people just didn't really open their eyes to him at all during his Kings tenure. I mean, we have to talk about Rashawn just for a moment in terms of the on-the-court thing. Mm-hmm. I did a deep dive on him. A deep dive. I can't speak English, and it's past midnight, so I'm super tired. He does not handle the ball a whole lot. So when he grabs it, he is one of the most determined front court players in the entire league. I think he held the ball in less than 2 seconds per touch. Mm-hmm. So for him, it was either a shot or a pass. And when I went back to watch the video, that aligned with the numbers. He is supremely good at cutting to the basket. Mm-hmm. And that goes a long way in when he gets the ball. It's an immediate shot at him. It's either a flip shot, it's a dunk, it's a layup, it's whatever. But he is just so confident in understanding. I have a shot here, and if I don't have that shot and I'm getting the ball, I'm passing that ball the hell back or the hell out. I'm just not putting myself in a situation where I'm going to be forcing shots. Mm-hmm. That type of intelligence, as we know, is going to help an NBA team. Yep. If the Kings lose out on him and then they like try to pigeonhole Marvin Bagley at center instead, oof. I mean, they are going to be horrific. You'll be removing a guy who's like plus 60% from the field, someone who understands cutting patterns, understand offensive positioning, understands offensive efficiency, and you'll be replacing it with what?
Right. Yeah, I'm reminded Miron Fader of The Ringer put out a piece on Andre Drummond today, and it's just a really good read about how Drummond was a couple of years ago. Remember, he was trying to like stretch his range out to the three-point line because he was like, this is just the way the NBA is going, but he never really felt comfortable with it. And eventually he was just like, no, I'm just going to do me. Like, I'm just going to be an absolutely dominant offensive rebounder. I'm going to set good screens. I'm not going to be a go-to guy on offense, and that's okay. I'm not going to try to force it and become, you know, this high usage, everything runs through me in the post. I think Rashawn is that same way. Like, Rashawn, we're talking about Poku could be a unicorn. Rashawn's not going to be a unicorn, and that's okay.
Right.
Like, he knows what he's good at, and he's, you know, he knows that the Kings right now are going to run through De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Haliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes. He's just going to be that low-usage, scrappy guy. He's got the floater game, which works really well, but he's not going to shoot a ton of threes. You know, they're not going to run a ton of plays for him other than pick and rolls, but he works well in tandem with some of these other guys on the team. So if you're Sacramento, Mort, A, do you want to retain him at all? And B, if so, you know, is that 4 year, $80 million price point, is that something you'd be comfortable paying if you're the Kings?
So first and foremost, yes, if I'm the Kings, I would absolutely be wanting to retain him if I want to be competitive right now. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of going back to what I said about Monty McNair, if they're going to have another passive season. And when I say passive, it's like letting Rashawn go and not aggressively trying to get better. You know, no, I mean, I obviously would want him back, and I would want him back at preferably less than $20 million, because $20 million is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. But I also understand that he fits a need, and he's really, really good. So I wouldn't feel uncomfortable down the line because I know I would get a very high baseline worth of production. Plus, as the Kings front office knows, they have 2 years of data on Holmes in the Sacramento Kings system. So you know what you're getting. Mm-hmm. You're not getting a question mark here. So would I feel comfortable signing him to that amount? I mean, I would grow comfortable, I think. Yeah. The question to me isn't whether or not the king should do that. It's why would he return? That's the thing I'm asking. And also, just you brought up Evan Fournier and the Celtics earlier with the TPE. Mm-hmm. As we know, TPEs can actually be used to acquire sign and trade guys. Mm-hmm. I'm saying maybe they should have waited. Mm. Because Rashawn Holmes on the Celtics, playing off of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, are you freaking kidding me?
Yeah, that would have been good.
That would have been really good. Yeah.
Really hate to see it.
Oh, gosh.
All right, let's move on before I go down that road too far.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say that by Felicia's coming pretty soon. Don't worry. Let's go to the Pelicans, Mort, who have a number of big decisions to make this offseason. The first of which is what to do with Lonzo Ball, who is a restricted free agent this summer. We've heard a number of teams are interested in him, including the Bulls, who we'll get to shortly. The Knicks apparently are as well. So I'll ask you the same question I did about Rashawn. If you're the Pelicans, you have, you know, Brandon Ingram on a max deal. You have Zion, who's going to get a max as soon as he possibly can. So, you know, you have two of your three pieces in place already in terms of, you know, rounding out that big three.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think Lonzo is that last piece? And if so, how much are you willing to spend to retain him?
No, I don't think he's that last piece. I think you need someone better. But that's not to say that Lonzo isn't good. So I think it's one of those birds in a hand kind of situations that, you know, you have Lonzo who is really good and who would be tremendous as like the fifth option on, you know, an optimized Pelicans team. Like, let's say Nikhil Alexander-Walker next year takes like a major leap and becomes their solidified shooting guard, for example. Like someone who comes in, puts up 16, 17 points per game playing off of Ingram and Zion. So you have like that threesome of Williamson, Ingram, and Alexander Walker like being your main offensive producers. Under that kind of scenario, I think Ball would just make so much sense. Being a spot-up shooter, a facilitator, a defender, a rebounder, someone who can get the break going. But if he's like the third best player on that team, I think your overall talent ceiling is going to be a little bit limited. I think your overall potential as a collective unit is going to be limited. And I say that fully recognizing that Ball got better this year, mm-hmm. and I don't anticipate him suddenly stopping that development. I think he's going to get better even next year again. But he's still not a guy who feels comfortable within the three-point line, honestly. He's just not. He never generates free throws mm-hmm. whatsoever. His game is really up and down. I question whether or not he can find that high level of consistency that you just need out of a guard, really.
Yeah, 1.2 free throw attempts per game this season. He hit them at 78.1% after never cracking 56.6 before, but that is a sample size of 64 free throws, which is not especially meaningful.
No, I mean, that's something Zion can get in like four games.
Yeah. Well, ask David Griffin, maybe not.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, he has improved as a 3-point shooter, especially, and you know, pretty low turnovers for a guy who handles the ball as much as he does. So
well, that's because he stands on the perimeter a whole lot. Right. I think context is really important here, because as our friends of the podcast Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg points out, when he starts to drive, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I don't have synergy access. Mm-hmm. But when he starts to drive, and I can see that when I watch Pelicans games as well, he loses the ball quite a bit. When he goes in amongst the trees and a crowd, oh boy, that ball handling becomes shaky.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's kind of the big question, especially that we saw, you know, the rise of point Zion this year, is what's the archetype of point guard you need next to him? Like
a spot-up shooter.
Right, so like more of a Jamal Murray than a Lonzo.
Well, Lonzo is a pretty decent spot-up shooter. The thing is, you wouldn't be paying him just for spot-up. You'd be paying him for all of his talents, mm-hmm. and some of them you wouldn't utilize as much because you're running point Zion.
Yeah.
So you might as well look at options that come cheaper, because and this is really the art of team building, if you ask me. you know, sometimes teams go out of their way to pay guys who are really good. But if you don't allocate the right money mm-hmm. for the right talent that you're going to utilize, then what the hell is the point? Like, if you're paying Lonzo $20 million a year for being for his talent, which is pushing the basketball, being a high-volume ball handler, for being a great defender, or whatever, and he's not a great defender. He's good, and sometimes he's pretty average. It's somewhere in between those things. But if you then put him in a system where all he does offensively is spotting up, then what the hell are you paying him for?
Right. Yeah. So that brings us back to the question, if you're the Pelicans, do you want to retain him, and how much are you willing to spend on him?
Right, that's the thing. I want to retain him, but the money, that just has to make sense. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, and I don't really know what the walkaway price is. To be completely honest with you, that's such a difficult question.
Yeah.
Like, it's just in terms of figuring out what the right money is. I feel $20 million is being brought up a whole lot as like, that's the Lonzo deal.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of concerns me, because if that is like universally agreed upon, that that's the Lonzo contract, then the Knicks, for example, who like him and have $50 million to burn, could go, well, we'll give you 22 and a half. And then suddenly you're finding yourself in a situation where you go, oh, that's a lot of money.
Right.
That's a lot of money for Lonzo Ball.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not necessarily, even if they do re-sign him, there's no guarantee that he ends that contract on the Pelicans. They could re-sign him with the intention of trading him later and using him as a big either salary matching chip or as the main piece in a trade. But yeah, it's a tricky balance. I agree with you, somewhere in the 20 to 25 is ideally where you get him. I would, if someone throws a max at him, you got to let him walk.
Yeah, oh, even 25. Like, when you said that, the hairs on my neck kind of raised. That's, I wouldn't feel comfortable paying him 25.
Yeah. No, I think especially given the rest of New Orleans roster, it would be tough too. And that leads into that.
Like, Kyron Lewis is right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it leads into, I mean, they have Eric Bledsoe as well, who I think I know, I'm not saying he's part of the future. I think if anything, Pelicans fans would rip my throat out for saying that he was. I'm saying he's just on the roster right now. So
yeah.
He's owed $18.2 million or $18.1 million next year. He has 19.4 in 22-23, but only $3.9 million of that is guaranteed. So it's safe to say the Eric Bledsoe era in New Orleans did not go especially well this year. I think
mm-hmm.
Every Pelicans fan that I saw really seemed to detest every time he was on the floor. So
yeah.
Do you think the Pelicans should be in a hurry to try to get him off their books this summer to then free up some extra money for Lonzo, Josh Hart, who we'll get to in a minute?
Yeah, like ASAP. But the thing is, though, I think the secret might be out.
With Bledsoe.
The word might be out with Bledsoe. I think this is one of those situations where it seems we're just going to go, oh, you want us to take Bledsoe? Yeah, that's going to cost you.
Right. Oh, yeah. He's not returning positive value at this point.
Right.
There's no way.
And that, and if you have to sacrifice assets to get off of him, I don't think that is a positive argument when you try to resize Zion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one thing working in the Pelicans' favor, I think it's like them, aside from OKC, who has the most extra picks coming, I think it's like New Orleans and Houston after the James Harden mm-hmm. trade are kind of neck and neck. So they have a ton of extra picks coming their way, mostly courtesy of the Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday trades. So, you know, they do have, they could include like the Lakers first this year to get off of, oh no, it's protected this year. Just kidding. Unprotected next year. So they could use the Lakers first next year, knowing LeBron and Anthony Davis are signed. They're not going anywhere. You know, it's probably going to be in the late 20s. You can use that pick as a sweetener to get off of Bledsoe's contract. But
so why would you want to do that, but not include a pick if you're the Thunder to get off of Horford?
Because I think the Pelicans and Thunder are in two different places in their rebuild.
They are, but even so, aren't you still trying to optimize assets so you can make like the big swing? To if you're the Pelicans, for example, do you really want to sacrifice that asset if you can pivot that into a larger trade and get back like a third star?
Yeah, I would try to do similar to what Daryl Morey did with Al Horford this past year, where they gave up a 2025 top six protected pick to get off of Horford. They gave up Maladone. They gave up the rights to Micić as well. But they got in Danny Green, who is actually going to help them. So Bledsoe is making $18 million. If I'm giving up a first-round pick to get off of him, I'm at least trying to trade him for a player who will help us next year as well. Like, I'm not just trying to completely salary. Like, here, Thunder, here, Knicks, you have $50 million in space. Just take him, and we want nothing in return. I don't think you should do that. But if you're giving up a late first-round pick to get off of this actively harmful player and bringing in someone else who you think can make a contribution next year, then I consider it. Yeah.
Okay. I agree with that logic. So who's that player?
Yeah. Therein lies the question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it'll be easy to do it, but I would certainly, if I'm David Griffin, I'm calling every GM around the league and I'm asking, you know, what does it take to get off of Bledsoe first of all? And then what will you give me in return? Any value whatsoever, will you give me something? Or, you know, are you only willing to take him into cap space and give me nothing back?
Agreed.
Same question for Steven Adams, too. Do you think he's got 2 years left? They acquired him last year and then extended him right away. So he has 2 years, about $35 million across those 2 years. Do you think he is the right center to pair next to Zion long-term? Should they be in any rush to move him?
I don't think he's the right center. I don't think necessarily he's a bad fit. It's just a matter of role. Like he was a full-time starter, averaging almost 28 minutes per game. And I think the question is, what kind of role would he accept? I mean, I would argue that he's too good to just be a backup. But at the same time, for the New Orleans Pelicans specifically, I think he would function so much more if the primary portion, or the vast majority of the portion of his minutes comes without Zion on the floor. So does that necessitate a trade? I don't know. Maybe he's okay being a backup, but like he's not past his prime. No. So maybe he's just like, no, I don't want to do that. I actually want to go to a team where I can get minutes.
Yeah. And I guess part of that question, too, is whether New Orleans feels Jackson Hayes is ready to take over as the starting center.
Oh, he's not. Yeah. Oh, no. He is not there, but he is a much better scorer than Steven Adams is. Question is, do they need that? Mm-hmm. Do they need that scoring right now? Or do they need the defense or just someone who can shoot and play defense would be optimal? Like, let's go back in the time machine and get them Ray of LaFrance. That would be great.
Or even like a Miles Turner. Somehow get Miles Turner.
Miles Turner might actually be the most logical trade piece for the Thunder. For the Pelicans, of course. Yeah.
Well, the problem is for who are you giving back to Indiana?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. They are not in a rebuilding process, so they wouldn't want draft picks or young guys. Eric Bledsoe wouldn't fit them whatsoever.
Maybe Alonzo sign-and-trade?
Yeah, I was actually thinking of a different sign-and-trade. I was thinking Josh Hart and then maybe something else. So Pelicans Twitter are going to murder me for this. Najee Marshall and Josh Hart?
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean,
I get that Marshall isn't like a fully fledged, you know, starter yet, but he's decent.
Yeah. No, I think there could be something there, but it does feel like this Pelicans roster as currently constructed is nowhere near where it's going to be once they're back in, you know, regular playoff contention. They have the pieces to work with. They have a ton of picks. They have a ton of salary matching contracts. And I'm glad you brought up Hart because he's another guy, restricted free agent this summer. he's one of those under the radar free agents who I think a smart team should be going after. And I, you know, I'm sure the Pelicans are hoping no one notices that he's about to be a free agent, but you know, he could be in line for probably maybe not eight figures, but you know, somewhere around the mid-level exception.
Oh, I would think more, no?
Maybe.
Like, okay, here's the thing. While he's not a great shooter, he's respectable enough. He gets you just enough points, and he certainly gives you a ton of rebounds. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he gives you some defense. Like, he's not a great defender, but he's... Okay, so I haven't watched every Pelicans game, obviously. I just haven't had the chance to watch 72 of them. Mm-hmm. But I do notice a pattern with him, which seems that defensively, he's just steady. I would probably go more to Mason and Shamit to really give me the full details on Josh Hart's defense, but I'm not left with a bad impression on what he is as a defender. Mm-hmm. So if he comes in and becomes a high-impact rebounder, which obviously he is, a high-impact defender, and a decent offensive producer, I mean, then we're looking at a guy who probably should be making around $15 million a year.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know if that offer is going to be there, but that doesn't mean that he isn't deserving of such an offer.
Would he be interesting? I know Chicago is really like interested in a playmaker, and they should be. Mm-hmm. But they also seem to really have a hole at the three because Patrick Williams should be a four moving forward.
Right.
I mean, would Josh Hart make sense as the long-term three in Chicago?
I mean, I guess that's...
I don't think he might not be a good enough shooter, right?
Right, or is he big enough to play the three against a Kawhi or... I mean, I guess a lot of these guys are moving up to the... Like, LeBron's moving up to a four most of the time, especially in meaningful minutes. KD's moving up to the four, but, like, is he big enough to handle that full-time? I don't know.
Well, he's played small forward over the past 2 years in with the Pelicans, and also positions are dead anyway. Yeah. He would just be a wing player.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah, but I'm going to not correct myself, but honestly, I think the playmaking is more of a probably a bigger need. And at the same time, like, here's the thing: if Hart was a knockdown 3-point shooter,
yeah,
good lord,
oh yeah,
I mean,
it'd be $20 million easy.
Yeah, that would be like more than OG Anunoby money.
Yeah, or more than Joe Harris money.
Yeah.
And he showed it. I mean, he hit almost 40% as a rookie, but. It has since hovered around the 33-34% over the next three seasons. Yeah,
it has not been pretty since his rookie season from a 3-point shooting perspective. And this is like what I'm saying. Some of these guys who hit that mediocrity level from an offense perspective, I really want them just to lean into the three and just spend the entire summer just hitting triples and coming back with that shot because it just helps you so much more. What, like, if he is to stay with the Pelicans specifically, who are using him off the bench primarily, what's the deal? Like, what's the number?
Right. That's why I'm thinking, like, $8 to $9 million a year.
If they could get that done, David Griffin deserves, like, so much consideration for executive of the year.
I just, you know, there are a lot of teams out there with cap space this summer, and the market dried up. In terms of superstar free agents, but we've just seen it so many times where it's like, even though teams have cap space, it dries up quickly, right? You sign like the teams that spend money, like the Knicks will spend money this summer, but they'll get in two or three guys and that space is gone. Like, I don't think OKC is going to splurge on a big name free agent. Maybe they go after, you know, restricted free agents like Josh Hart, and maybe they try to push the price point just a little bit beyond where New Orleans feels comfortable. But
well, Josh Hart is 26. He's practically 6 years older than the entire roster of the Thunder.
Right. But, you know, like Miami, Toronto, the Spurs, I know are going to have a lot of space, but like Miami gets Kyle Lowry, that space is gone.
Oh, the Spurs. Wow, Keldon Johnson and Josh Hart would be the best wing rebounding duo in the entire league.
Josh Hart does feel like a Spurs player, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But they are pretty set in the backcourt/wing rotation now with Murray White.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that Hard and Keldon Johnson,
yeah,
like who are both great rebounders from, like, despite being like 6'4", 6'5", I would love that just to see those two out rebound. Like, oh god, they would out rebound Jaren Jackson to the point of humility, embarrassment. Really, my god.
DeMar DeRozan is playing center for the Spurs next year.
Yeah. I'm just now realizing that Josh Hart at 6'5" is almost doubling the rebounding effort of Jaren Jackson Jr., who's 6'11". Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mort. Since you brought up the Bulls, let's go to them next. I think there are two huge storylines for them this summer, the first of which came up the other day in exit interviews. Zach LaVine was asked kind of what's next for you in terms of free agency, because he's a free agent in 2022. You know, I think someone asked, like, would you give a hometown discount? And he was basically just like, no, hell no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report, I believe, was the first to float this a couple months ago. The Bulls do have the option to renegotiate his contract and then extend him using their cap space. Otherwise, they're limited to only 120% of what he's currently making, which makes no financial sense for LaVine. So if they do that, they can get him close to what he would make on, you know, if he became a free agent in 2022, close to his max. Do you think that makes sense for either side, Mort?
Yeah, I do. I mean, look, he's just finished his 7th season. Mm-hmm. He's going into his 8th, which means he's eligible for 30% of the cap. So if he renegotiates and extends this year, he would get the full 30% of the salary cap. And, I mean, we don't know this. I don't think he will make All-NBA. Mm-hmm. But if he does make All-NBA, he'll be eligible for 35% of the cap. The Bulls would then have to clear more cap space to be able to afford the additional 5%. Mm-hmm. But they could, in which case, you know, he's locked up. And for good money, like, why would he turn that down? It's a max contract.
Yeah, this is from Pincus's article. It would take about $14 million in cap space to give him a raise starting with next season that would pay him almost $152 million over 4 years. So, again, probably not exactly as much as he can hit in 2022, but it also removes the risk if you have, God forbid, he, you know, suffers an ACL tear or Achilles tear or something like that late next season.
Why would he be eligible for more? Sorry to interrupt, but why would he be eligible for more in 2022?
Because the cap's still going to rise again.
So just cap volume. Yeah. We're not talking percentages here.
I don't think it would be substantially more. But, I mean, you could also get a fifth year tacked onto the deal at that point.
Yeah. But, like, that logic would apply to any contract in the NBA. If every superstar would just wait signing the big contract a year, I mean, the cap would jump every single year. That would be worth more. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you could go to Zach and his agent and just go, we can max you right now for the next 4 years. Like, right now. Tomorrow, you'd be a max player if we just do that.
Yeah. I mean, the NBA's rules governing extensions in general are stupid, and I've caped on that for a while now. But, I mean, if he waited until the following offseason, he could start at almost $34.7 million based on the current projection, so he would get a 5-year, $201.5 million deal instead of 4 years, you know, 151 or whatever. But
yeah, but here's the thing for me. I wouldn't care if it's a 4 or a 5-year deal for one reason. Then a couple years down the line, I can renegotiate and extend again.
Or you'll become eligible for the full 35% when you're a 10-year veteran. So
yeah,
it's close enough that it shouldn't be a deal breaker for him either way. It gives him, again, insurance against a major injury in particular. I guess the big question is whether he feels confident enough in the Bulls' direction to make that sort of commitment. But at the same time, I mean, we've seen, you know, time and again recently that just because you're on a contract doesn't mean you can't force your way out later. So
Right. I think he should get the bag simply because he had a ACL tear back in Minnesota. I realize that for some that might be a weak argument because he's showed no signs of having long-term issues because of that injury, which, by the way, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you have had one of those injuries, why not just lock up that back immediately?
Yeah.
Plus, also, I mean, they love him.
Yeah.
There's a reason they went out and got Nikola Vucevic just to pair up. That was a sign to Zach as well. Like, we want this. I mean, yeah, it didn't work this year. But this year is also weird. I mean, you and I have talked at length about how this particular season might even be more messed up than last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so super off. So I'm not really putting the, you know, I'm not saying that the Nikola Vucevic trade is in any ways a failure or a disappointment. Like, they just need to get acclimated to one another. Like, Zach got COVID yeah. right after it. It was just bad timing all around. But that showed a sign right there. They have Patrick Williams, who I still think projects as a really good two-way forward at the end of the day. They have Thaddeus Young, who is literally LaVine's best friend. I don't think they're going to move off of him. They got Troy Brown Jr. I was about to say they have a draft pick this year, but they may have a draft pick this year.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on the top four. Yeah. So we'll see, but I don't hate this roster. I hate components of the roster, and I think the Bulls right now, as currently constructed, would look a lot different in a couple of months because, I mean, just read between the lines of what Billy Donovan says and what Arturis Karnišova says, and it's all about we want to improve the roster. We want to get better. That does not mean only internal development. That means getting out of Lauri Markkanen, of Denzel Valentine, Ryan Arcidiacono, like three guys who just are a net negative for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, get out of those players and just find guys who you know you can add to that team. Like Daniel Theis
yep.
was such a fantastic acquisition. I understand they're already set in the front court, so he might just become a victim of depth. But, I mean, that's a good-ass player to have around as opposed to, you know, Daniel Gafford. I know he's playing well in Washington right now, but he's also having a playmaker alongside him. So, yeah, it's Zach would need to see that there's a vision, but I think that vision is clearly there. And Coby White still has enough value that if you want to pivot away from him to someone with more, I guess, you know, long-term potential or a better fit. Like, honestly, I think Coby would actually be pretty good for the Pelicans, right? He's that spot-up shooter that they need at the point. I mean, he's not being asked to do a whole lot else. His numbers back that up. He is much better as a spot-up shooter than someone off the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a sign-and-trade with Lonzo and then Coby White, and maybe you have to clear up more money to also re-sign Zach with the renegotiating extent. But if you can, I would say this, if you can find that money in the cap space that you somehow acquire Lonzo Ball and you renegotiate an extent with LaVine, that's an A-plus summer for the Bulls.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you made your feelings very clear about Lauri Markkanen, that the Bulls are not going to be pursuing re-signing him. And based on Lori's comments from exit interviews, it sounds like he's not super interested in re-signing with them either. He was saying, you know, he wants to go to a place where he can be in more of a featured role, and that's just not going to be the case in Chicago based on what we saw over the second.
Or in the NBA.
Yeah, Europe will be nice where he could have a featured role there. But right. What do you think is a fair price for him? Not for Chicago, because I don't think they're going to pursue him, but you know, what's a reasonable expectation for him this summer?
Well, he's probably expecting a lot more than what I think he's worth. Mm-hmm. I would compare him to Marvin Bagley in that sense. He's of course more of a pop guy than a role guy than Bagley, mm-hmm. but like he's a backup big who can get you points. So that's what, $7.5 million a year.
Yeah, it feels like some team is probably going to overpay him and just regret it.
Oh, they are. Oh, absolutely. That's absolutely going to happen. They look at Lauri Markkanen and they go, this could be the next Dirk. I still hear people make that argument. I mean,
it's going to be
he's not
Ryan Anderson 2.0.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Everything about Lauri from a personality perspective, I actually like. This is a good dude. That's not. I know that I'm ragging on him, but I'm not ragging on him as a human being. Very, yeah. very important to differentiate this. From a personality perspective, I only hear good things, and I speak to a lot of people about the Bulls because, like you know, I was a fan for 22 years. I still have a lot of emotional ties to that franchise. Everything I hear about him from a personality perspective is great. Mm-hmm. He's just not for this era. If Lauri Markkanen had made the NBA in 2001, he would have been a freaking all-star. There's no doubt in my mind. Because, oh, a seven-footer who can shoot that effortlessly? Really? Wow. That's great. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. You know what? When he's not shooting the three, he's useless. There's no point of Lauri Markkanen being on the court if he's not shooting the three and hitting.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. So I know you brought up Tice and, you know,
yeah.
because they acquired Vucevic, a starting role seems out of the question for him. But do you think if they can make the money work with regard to LaVine in particular, do you think they should try to bring back Tice as their primary backup?
If they could make the money work after doing all the things I just mentioned, of course, but I don't think they can.
Yeah.
He would be a sacrifice if you went the route of extending LaVine this summer. But if not, like if you have enough cap space to re-sign him, I would do so. I wouldn't break the bank. I'm not looking at like 14, 15 million. I'm probably looking at around 8 or 9, which I think is fair. To be honest with you, but if some team out there goes, oh, we think he's worth more than that, like 12, 13, yeah, I'd probably let him walk, but I would hurt doing so because he was so good. I'm Bulls fans really got, I mean, they really got this sense of, oh, we have good players again.
Yeah.
A lot of them said, like, I don't remember who said that. But some Bulls fan in like one of the first games that Tice played for him was like, I can't remember the last time we had a center this good. Like they had Vooch, but it was like, you know what I mean? Just having two centers of starting caliber, being of that quality. Like, and all he did was just box out, rebound, put up the extra like fight in like interior defense and whatnot, and everyone was like, wow, we haven't seen this in ages. Like so there might also be there's some romanticism involved here in how you look at Tice and looking at how the positions before that have just been horrid, but I just like his game. He passes the ball, he can shoot the three, he plays defense, he rebounds, he's sneaky athletic. You can also slide him down to the four if you need to. I just like him. I would love to retain him if I'm Arturis Karnišovas. I just don't know what the price tag is going to be.
Yeah, that's fair. He's going to be another one of those like under-the-radar guys who probably could be had for a reasonable price and will make much more of an impact than his contract would suggest.
Right, right. Also, by the way, Alvaro Gamino opted into his $10.2 million player option because obviously...
Yes.
But I think that could be one of those interesting things. Like, if you were Chicago and you were looking to make, like, a major move at some point this summer, having that contract might not be a bad thing if you are looking to match salaries or if you're trying to, like, build a pretty big package to acquire, like, a third star next to Vooch or LaVine. Then I think it's not... Like, Bulls fans were basically, like, just... crying after they saw that he picked up that option. I don't think it's that bad necessarily. If you want to match salaries, like having $10.2 million at your disposal, that could benefit you greatly.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up with the Toronto Raptors, Mort, who had just, if the Indiana Pacers didn't exist, the Toronto Raptors would have had the absolute season from hell. They didn't get to play in Toronto all year. They had to play the Tampa Bay Raptors. You know, just a lost season for them between having to move
right.
and they got ravaged by COVID at some point. So they have a couple big decisions coming up. The first of which is Kyle Lowry, who is a unrestricted free agent this summer. You know, he is greatest Raptor of all time, fan favorite. You know, you can't say enough about the impact that he's had on that franchise. Mm-hmm. And he's during his exit interviews, he said, look, my family is going to be a big part of this decision, but... years and money talk. So, knowing that Kyle Lowry turned 35 in late March, if you're the Raptors, how much would you offer him in terms of years and money?
Yeah, so Kyle's comment is well taken, but good luck getting the years. for any team, from any team.
Yeah.
And you're 35. You're not going to get, like, I would be absolutely blown away if he got, like, a four-year contract. I wouldn't even understand where, like, how that could come to fruition. The money I'm not really too worried about, because presumably he's going to sign a short term. Again, like, 2 years seems reasonable. I wouldn't understand why teams would go 3 years at this stage, mm-hmm. right? Or am I being too negative about Kyle?
No, I mean, this was at around the trade deadline. Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported he was looking for something in the neighborhood of 2 years, $50 million.
Nah, that's fine. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah. I don't see, I like, especially, you mentioned it, but best Raptor of all time, club legend. Like, yeah, of course you give him that contract.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Miami is lurking as the big threat for Kyle Lowry this summer, I think. I just wrote a piece at Forbes about how that could get complicated, especially if Bam Adebayo makes an all-NBA team, because he would then get a $5.6 million raise. He would cut into their cap space. You know, there's a world wherein Miami can clear $20-plus million to get Lowry into cap space. There's also a world where they're only at $11 million, which is if Bam gets the All-NBA, they extend qualifying offers to Duncan Robinson, which they're definitely going to do, and then Kendrick Nunn, which I think they probably will. I don't know for sure either way. You know, never doubt Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg. They signed and traded for Jimmy Butler 2 years ago when they didn't have cap space. So there will be ways to work around it. But, you know, other than that, it's like the Knicks, I guess, could be a threat, although I don't think they should necessarily go after Kyle given his age. There aren't a ton of options on them. I know the Sixers are interested, but there are a number of reasons. I'll have a piece later in the spring at Forbes about why that's not super realistic, at least in my opinion. So it does feel like Kyle staying in Toronto on a short-term deal feels like the best option for all parties.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it could be interesting to see if, you know, that competitiveness over the summer just kind of rises up and he just goes, oh, maybe there's a team out there that really, like, stands a good chance, mm-hmm. and he takes, like, a discount to sign somewhere.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I'm not, like, for his comment to say, you know, years and money matters, that indicates to me that he's not considering that route.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we've seen before how players can change their minds if they see a team that's gathering and that looks intriguing, and they just go, you know what, I need to become a part of this. I really do. What that team, you know, which team that is, no idea. Maybe that's the Heat. Maybe it's the Sixers with the homecoming. I don't know. Maybe he's just willing to take a lesser contract if he sees something that he really likes that makes him want to, like, go for the ring one more time.
Yeah.
But if not, take the bag and stay in Toronto. Why not? I mean, you solidified yourself as just one of the greatest, you know, players, probably the greatest players in Raptor history ever. You cement that position. You basically build yourself a second career as whatever you want to within the Raptors organization.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just take the money and see what happens.
Yeah, and I guess we'll get to their other big free agent decisions in a second here, but if they do re-sign Lowry and some of these other guys, like, are they as far off as they look this year? Could Kyle Lowry look at this roster and say, you know, maybe we're not a title front runner. We're not on the level of, like, the Brooklyn Nets or the Lakers or even the Clippers at this point, but, like, we could be in the mix. We could go on a 2020 Miami Heat type of run if everything breaks right.
Yeah.
I mean,
they could.
You still have Fred VanVleet. You still have Pascal Siakam. You still have Chris Boucher for another year. OG Anunoby is locked up long term. The other big free agent that they have is Gary Trent Jr., whom they acquired at the trade deadline for Norman Powell. Trent is a restricted free agent. Powell is unrestricted. Powell also came up in Jake Fisher's article as a guy who's probably looking at a pretty substantial payday, 80-90 million range, somewhere around there. Trent, I don't think will get there, but how much would you be willing to spend on Gary Trent if you're the Raptors?
I was thinking about this earlier because I had a feeling this question would come up. Doesn't it feel like $18 million per year is like the perfect number?
If they could get him for that, absolutely.
No, I understand that he probably would get more. But also, you know how young players tend to get a little bit extra because of potential and all that?
Yeah.
But, like, you know how the Magic got Jonathan Isaac for $17 million a year? Mm-hmm. Like, it felt right because he's not a dynamic offensive player. He's obviously a dynamic defensive player, but it felt kind of right. $18 million a year for Gary Trent feels just right. Now, of course, if he takes another leap, which he might, then he'll look underpaid.
Yeah.
So maybe that is taken into consideration. But I probably would have a hard time if it goes up to like 25. I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, in his 23 games starting after CJ went down in Portland, he averaged 18 points. He shot 39.7 from three on almost 9 attempts per game. You know, not much else in the rebounding assist department, but just that high volume of shooting and that accuracy is going or should get him paid this offseason.
And the defense.
And so I don't want to read too much into his Raptors career because by the time he arrived there, the wheels had already kind of come off and they weren't necessarily putting their best foot forward most nights. Kyle was like selectively resting for the final month of the season. So, you know, it's just hard to read into what he did there. The efficiency was not great, you know, 39.5% overall, but I'm not sweating that too much. I agree. Like, yeah, somewhere in the 18 to 20 million range, if you get him for that, you should be thrilled. And, you know, that's a pretty interesting, if you've got Van Vliet, Siakam, Lowry, OG Anunoby, Trent, and Boucher, that's a pretty intriguing top six.
I would say so. Is it an intriguing enough top six that Masai's going to stick?
That is another question that I do not have a good answer for. It feels like he's playing hardball. Because he knows that he's got a ton of leverage.
Yeah.
But I feel like part of that leverage was the Knicks really wanted him, and they seem pretty happy with Leon Rose at the moment.
God, that would put the Knicks in such a weird position, because you know what? I would move on from Leon Rose in a damn heartbeat if I had a chance to sign Masai Ujiri.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Masai has proven himself time and again. It's just like, you should not pass up greatness for, and this is with all due respect to Leon Rose, who has done a very good job with the Knicks this year.
Yes, he has. Objectively, but, yes.
You know, you don't pass up that upper echelon player, coach, front office, executive, whatever the case may be, just because you are pleased with what you currently have. If you can get an upgrade, you should target the upgrade every time.
Right. Right. Yeah, you don't say no to Karl-Anthony Towns because you have Cody Seller. Yeah.
Well said. Good analogy there. Yeah. Last question for the Raptors. Kem Birch also came over.
Yes.
And he was very good for them. That was one of the bright spots of this last month or two of the season where they actively weren't trying. How much would you pay to re-sign Kem Birch this summer, Mort, knowing that he's another guy who is probably going to fly right under the radar? And, you know, we got a 2-year, $6 million deal 2 years ago. So you probably don't have to spend a ton to retain him.
So I was thinking about this. I don't know if I'm being... I really like Kem Birch, but I also understand that he's 28, so he probably... Like, you can't make the potential argument anymore.
Right.
So I think what he showed in Toronto this year is probably very close to the ceiling that he's going to reach, right? I think we assume that. Yeah, okay. That case, it's somewhere between 9, maybe 11 million per year, I think.
I think I would be surprised if he even gets that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, maybe I could be super off here, but I think they're going to get him probably for like 2 years, 10, 2 years, 12, somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. That would, like, that's the Rashawn Holmes contract like 2 years ago.
Right.
That would, if they got him for that, that would be outstanding. I mean, I can't even comprehend how much that would help their salary structure over the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Just having that contract on their books.
Never doubt Masai, man.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point. Having Masai there maybe just gives him that opportunity to, or gives the Raptors that opportunity of getting someone like Kim Bershon for cheap, in which case, you know, that's how you get back into the swing of things. Yeah. Like, we and I talk about this so often. It's about allocating the right money. Mm-hmm. And if you get Kim Bershon on a deal where he outproduces his contract, that is obviously a positive. And you need as many players that you can possibly get who outproduce their contracts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe even if he doesn't get, you know, a full 9 or 10 million, like, say he gets 2 years, 10, maybe you give him a second-year player option, so if he performs well, he can go test the market next summer. But, yeah, he just feels like one of those textbook guys that slips under the radar. Gets more than the minimum, but, you know, probably should get more than he's going to end up getting, and I think that's where the really great executives separate themselves from the good, is when you identify those guys who, you know, should be getting X amount, and you're going to give them a half as much as what they probably should receive.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at him, and maybe it's because I'm under the impression that center values have returned a little bit. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of the Enes Kanter, Rashawn Holmes contracts anymore that we did a couple years ago. It seems like teams are back to wanting to pay centers a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
It's possible. I mean, we'll I guess we'll find out this summer, but
yeah,
I'm certainly interested to see how the Raptors offseason plays out, because this is, you know, they weren't not as bad as their record this year indicated, but there's a chance they get right back into the mix of a top four seed in the East next year. There's also a chance if Kyle Lowry leaves, they will settle into the Charlotte Hornets dead zone, as it should be affectionately referred to from now until the end of time. All right. On that note, Mort, that's a good place for us to wrap up. So hope
everyone... No, it's not. You had one more question in that email that I need to get to. You cannot leave me there without asking me the draft question for the Toronto Raptors, because I had a good take on that. Don't you dare take that away from me.
Yes, hit me. They're currently seventh in the lottery, so assume they don't jump up. They stay at seven, eight, somewhere in that range.
Alperen Sengun.
Are you going to say that for everyone in the 7-8 range?
Yes. Okay. Good. even for number 6, I'm going to go there.
Yeah.
But you know what? For the Raptors specifically, with Masai, with their international flavor, hell yes. Hell yes. I am going there. I am taking the Turk, and I'm giving him the starting spot at center immediately. Because that dude can just produce. And you know what? Given the fact that he is slightly old school just in terms of how he scores near the basket, but can also pass and all that, it's going to give Fred and Kyle, OG and Gary that many open threes. It's going to basically be such a great balance, offensively speaking, that you have the post presence who can also step out. Don't worry, he can still shoot. That's not a question. But yeah, I would love him in Toronto. I think that would be such a tremendous draft pick on their part if they get it.
Well, that is a good place for us to wrap up. So,
yes, it is, Brian.
So thank you all for listening. As always, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. And thanks for listening to our...
And check us out on YouTube at the NBA Show.
There you go. And thanks for listening to our live show on Locker Room. If you liked our show, please be sure to start your own room and engage with other fans on the app. Download the Locker Room app in the Apple App Store. Also on YouTube, I promise we don't hate your team as much as you seem to think that we do.
Oh, God, can we just take a minute to talk about that? What the hell happened there?
I don't know, man, but I can't wait for the Boston Celtics section.
Wow, we had a very reasonable Detroit Pistons take, I felt like, and we just got slaughtered. What the actual hell?
Yeah, again, just wait for Boston. Give me about 2 weeks, and then we will bring the real fire and brimstone.
You do realize that you're hurting my channel, right?
Maybe don't post that video for your own sake.
Yeah, I think that's a good play.
All right, Mark, get some sleep. Enjoy the play-in tournament. We'll catch up later this week.
Thank you, man. Later.